right, well, okay. Take it away, Linda.
All right. Okay. I'm coming from a background of, I was a preschool teacher before I was a mom, which was really helpful to me because I was the youngest in my family, so I knew nothing about babies or taking care of them. So then, thus my preschool years, I was in a room with 16 toddlers, one room, all day, every day, and the state limits at that time were 8 to 1. So we could legally, we only had to have 2 people in that room at any time. And you're talking about toddlers, you're talking about diapers, you're talking about potty training, you know, the whole thing. So I got broken in really fast. And yeah, it's since changed the limits. Then I moved from there to a preschool class of 3-year-olds. And I just love that because now we could really do things, you know. So that kind of gave me a lot of ideas and stuff. And then I went on to have my own preschool class of, you know, 3 kids, 2 and under. And, but it was tough then. I was a stay-at-home mom. Jim was gone all the time. And I had all these little kids. And I had no family. So there were no babysitters, no nothing. And I never wanted to dump 3 little kids on somebody, like, you know, and more than that, I didn't want them to dump their kids on me and make really overwhelming. So yeah, so part of it was, I don't want to say survival, but how is this best gonna work? How do I keep these kids from killing each other, getting killed, you know, poisoned, whatever, and keep them not just happy or entertained, because entertained is not, you know, having come from a preschool, we had actually curriculum for 3-year-olds, you know, that I had to come up with. And so it kind of set my mind to thinking how to not entertain the kids, but how to train them, how to teach them, how to give them opportunities to learn, grow, develop, to prepare them for school. So that's kind of where I'm coming from. And we're not going to talk about spiritual stuff today. We're not going to talk about spiritually training your kids because that's not what this is about. And I know you guys have covered that. And so if it seems like I'm missing the boat on that, I'm not purposely not talking about doing devotions with your kids and things like that. So we're not covering that today. Okay, not the intention. But I do want to give you a charge. There's a couple of examples in Scripture about... And especially as a homeschool mom, it can be overwhelming to think, I can't teach my kids everything they need to know, so how do I know what plan God has for them, what they're going to need, what, you know. And so you trust the Lord for that, but you try to give them the best foundation and the best basic set of skills you can. And you let God take care of the rest. I think about Moses being brought up in Pharaoh's household. God knew he would need all that background in writing and literature and that because of what he was going to do. I think about David. When he faced Goliath, that wasn't the first time he picked up a sling. He was a shepherd. You know, everything he learned in the sheepfold, he carried into being a king and even facing Goliath in that. I mean, he went before Saul and said, hey, I killed a lion and a bear, and this guy, this filthy Philistine, you know, he's going to be like them. So God is always there helping us, but that doesn't mean that we can just slack and not think about what do our kids need to know, how do I help them develop. Because the first, well, I have some statistics here. I pulled up a couple different sources. Researchers have known for decades children's brains begin to develop at 3 weeks after conception. And from that point to age 3, by age 3, 85% of your child's brain's architecture is in place, meaning the connections and all those things. And those connections are formed when they are challenged and when they're thinking. So 85% by age 3. That's kind of scary.
Don't go through
That's really scary. Okay. This is just, I'm not in any way like endorsing. I found this article, which was kind of interesting because it had to do with, they were pushing for more education before kindergarten and before preschool, which was not what I'm advocating. But this is stuff to think about. Michael Phelps, who is a UCLA biophysicist, said, if we teach our children early enough, it will affect the organization or the wiring of their brains. And then the article goes on to say, deprivation, which is the opposite of enrichment, can also permanently affect the organization of the brain. For instance, the language centers of the cortex are not able to reach full maturity without proper stimulation. We're talking about language, says psychiatrist Arnold Schiebel. He said that's why so-called, he talks about feral children, children who have been grown up in the wilderness without adults, children who have been lost, and if they don't hear language before the age of 10, they cannot master a language after that. Mm-hmm. It's done. That window has closed. So just kind of interesting, the way God designed our brains, the very early years, right at from birth to 5, are just so critical for laying a foundation for our kids learning for the rest of their lives. So what do we do? How do we handle the, and I don't want to throw all this on you like, it's too late, you're going to ruin the kid. No, it's not like that. Number one, we trust the Lord because we need to be sensitive to his leading. I mean, I can attest, I'm sure Jill can attest, after years of homeschooling, Bev can attest, we don't know. We just don't know what our kids need exactly, but we need to be on our faces at God's feet. Constantly asking him, Lord, show me, direct me, help me understand. But we also need to be thinking in these ways for our kids. We need to be open to the idea. It's not a matter of how do I get through this day and keep my child relatively quiet so I can do my thing. No, you were given children for a purpose, to raise them up like arrows in the hand of a warrior. So Lord, what can I do with my child today to help them grow and develop? And a lot of it is going to have to do with experiences. And we have to be kind of concerned about, there's a difference between educating and entertaining. And we have to be careful not to be entertaining our kids just to keep them quiet and happy all day long. When it comes to infants, most of newborns, most of their behaviors directed toward the goal of comfort and satisfaction when they're newborns. They want to be comforted. They want to be satisfied, have their tummies full. They want to sleep when they're tired. The studies have shown that the most powerful enhancers of brain development is the relationship between the parent and the infant. That's the most important thing when they're newborns, is that relationship that you're, and usually a child will attach to one main person, which is usually the mom. If you guys are blessed enough to be able to spend most of your child's waking hours with them, you will be that person. And that's critical for your baby to have that relationship. It's that security and that comfort. And so you can't really spoil your child when they're first born by holding them too much, by cuddling them too much. That's what they need. Looking into their face. When a baby's born, they have a fixed focus of 8 to 10 inches. Well, guess what? When you're holding a baby, your face is 8 to 10 inches from theirs, whether you're breastfeeding or bottle feeding. God designed them that way so they can see your face. And it's kind of interesting because babies have a particular affinity to faces. even things that are not faces that look like faces have the general scheme of a face they're attracted to. I lost my place in my notes. Okay. So while you're feeding your baby, you should as much as possible. I mean, I know it's tough when you're covered up. Hopefully when you're home and you don't have somebody watching, you can be looking at them and interacting with them, just smiling at them. That's really important for them to have that face-to-face connection with you. They have all their senses from birth, so they can see, hear, taste, smell, touch. They know when you're talking to them and when your voice is just a distant, you know, you're talking to somebody else or there's other noise in that. And sometimes watching TV or that when you're nursing can be overstimulating to a baby. So especially if it's a pre-sleep nursing, to make the atmosphere quiet and calm, your voice calm, helps to soothe the baby and not have TV going all the time. It's interesting if you watch, like even with a newborn, when they can see your face, they generally will start at the hairline, scan down your face to your chin, and then back up to your eyes. And that's, God designed them for that, because they have a special affinity to faces. So keeping your face that 8 to 10 inches away is important so they can focus on it. I mean, they do learn to focus in and out in their eyes as their eyes develop. It's also important if your baby has in a car seat or that riding in a car, think about the 8 to 10 inches. That's their easiest place to focus. So that's where you want to hang toys and things. Further away, they can see it, but they're not going to be able to focus on it. Closer up, of course, is going to be freak them out. Black and white is good, the sharp contrast. Anything, even if you just draw faces on things, you know, just general faces, it's more attractive to them. It's important to have your baby tummy time on the floor, back time. You know, some of them don't like being on their stomachs, but it's good because they're stretching up like that, developing muscles, learning head control, back time, sitting up in a car seat or a bouncy seat, swing time. But you want to kind of rotate them from thing to thing to keep them moving, to keep them stretching, to keep them developing in different ways. I did pull up, an article on screen time. And Meg and Jill, well, I guess some of you already know the answer to this, but, you're kidding me. Okay. Yeah, they blanked out one page and the first page to it. Let me close this out. An interesting article on screen time, because, and I'm really thankful that this was not an option when I was having babies. There was no such thing as screen time because we didn't have screens. I mean, except for a TV screen, and I made that really inconvenient in the house that we had at the time. So this is the American Academy of Pediatrics, and these are their recommendations, and this is an article by CNN. And they just kind of distill it all down. They said, infants 18 months and younger. Anybody want to guess what the screen time, amount of screen time? Screen time being TV, phone, tablet, anything like that.
No screen time. 4 hours.
No screen time. 18 months.
No, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I'm not what the average is. Not with, no. But they recommend no screen time. No screen time. It says, and that is tough. And part of that can even be you on your own, on your phone while you're holding the baby. They said the noise and activity of a screen are distracting for a child. Even if the baby isn't directly looking at the screen, for example, if a mother is nursing her child on the couch while watching TV, the baby can be overstimulated by the lights and sounds. Perhaps the most negatively Screen time causes a disconnect between parents and children. And I do struggle with this because I'm homeschooling my kids. And, you know, I get texts when we're in the middle of school and I should just turn my phone off, you know. My kids are older and I kind of, but it's funny because if I'm sitting at the table with my daughter, especially my daughter who is, she's very, and I this is terrible, she's very ADD, like diagnosed ADD and all kinds of learning disabilities. And so I have to find this balance between looking at what she's doing. Sometimes she'll look at me and go, "Do you mind?" Because it makes her nervous if I watch what she's writing. But then when I turn away and, you know, I mean, I think she wants me to sit there and do this or something. But if I turn away and I look at my iPad to read something, then she'll be acting out, you know. And it's like, because she knows as soon as I turn my attention away, she'll act out. And so we may find that with our kids, especially when they're toddlers, which you guys haven't hit yet, the toddler stage, but that they know when you're paying attention and when you're not.
I have a question.
Yes.
How about moms? It's interesting you should say that when your nurse don't have a screen. How about like a book? Because I know like Angie has said that she'll read books while she's nursing.
On her phone?
On her phone. That's an interesting thought. You're not giving total attention.
Right. But at that time, it might be helpful to read out loud. Because then the baby can hear your voice. You know, look at the baby, read, you know, read out loud. They don't know what you're reading, you know, for especially a newborn. But hearing your voice is really important, you know. But, I mean, there's a difference between totally being absorbed over here and occasionally looking and, you know. I understand wanting to redeem the time, especially a mom with a couple kids. Yeah, definitely.
She loves to read all
yeah.
Challenge me.
Or maybe sometimes you're doing that, but not every time you nurse.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
So, and then it says 2 to 5 years old, 1 hour per day. So that's their recommendation. Let me see. Where was I? Okay.
And just a question. Do you think there's a difference between your phone, iPad, or TV, you know, for a toddler?
They just call them all screen time, you know, that because it's really your child's not being very active and their brain is being stimulated by all the sights and sounds. And we do have an explosion of people who of children struggling with ADD and that, and you can't help but think that there's a connection between, especially like, I am not an advocate of Sesame Street. I know it's, you know, some people will say, oh, well, they're teaching letters and stuff. But think about it. As somebody, I mean, I have taught my kids all up through high school. So what is Sesame Street? We do like 30 seconds. Bah! Switch to something else. Bah! Something else. Lights flashing, you know, in your face. Then boom, switch again. It teaches them to constantly be looking for that quick, you know, change. That's not a good habit to enforce in your kids. Okay, we'll move on.
You didn't ever thought about that.
I know Mary has talked to me about that too, because she said that Mallory did a study once of how like a lot of the TV shows aged at kids affect the brain. Mm-hmm. And just talking about they can't process all those flashing colors,
right,
and everything, and
right,
how it affects the brain. It's just, it's
right.
It's,
and it teaches them to not focus for
right
very long
right
at a time. So, yeah, they don't learn to stay with a thought, to stay
right
with something for very long.
And then they get
so
to school and struggle.
Right.
Because Mary was even saying in her study, the best show was Blue's Clues. Because
yes, it's very slow.
It was very slow.
And even
yes
asking a question and waiting and having
right
a pause. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Slowly saying, this is what we're going to do now. We're going to go to the
right
mailbox, you know?
Right, right. Whereas you
rolling
as a parent are like, just shoot me now, but
no,
yeah.
Right. Because Paul and I were talking about Blue's Clues yesterday. Mm-hmm. He teaches about when you lose something, you go back where you were. And it worked.
It's so slow.
It worked yesterday. He couldn't find his phone. I said, okay, let's get it down. But it's still new.
Get your notepad.
You go way back. And he found it. And every time. Oh, that's a wonderful thing, because we did one.
So if the show bores you as a mom, it's probably right on.
Probably. But remember screen time, 18 months and older, or younger, you know, that should not be the thrust of it. Music. Babies love music. Different kinds of music. I mean, they actually have studies about classical music and how it temporarily, like if adults, they take adults or children, and they have them do a puzzle or something like that. And then they have them listen to classical music and do the same puzzle or do a similar puzzle. They're much faster at it. It's a short-term thing, though, because it doesn't last beyond that. But think about if you're playing classical music, if you're playing praise music, you know, you want to dance with your baby, get them to move to the music. We could probably get Marissa in here sometime to talk about that. She's a music therapist. Finger play for babies and that. The clapping songs there. It's kind of funny because I'm kind of thrown back now after, you know, my youngest is 12. And now I have a baby in the house again because I have a grandbaby. And so I discovered, and these are things I did not have, Pandora. Pandora, and I put on, I forget what my choice was, so then you get all these songs. And I'm like, oh, I remember this song, you know, all these skinnamarinky-dinky-dink, you know, and all these different songs that I'm singing that I haven't heard in so many years, and I'm having a good time, and I sit on the floor with Hadley and play, and she's just kind of like, who are you? And Tucker's sitting there, and Tucker's like, great, now I'm going to have this song in my head for the rest of the day. So yeah, I know he's like, okay, as soon as you get home from your walk, mom, she's mine, because he'll sit on the floor and play with her, and I play the music so he can sing along and learn them, you know. But yeah, it's, and they love, I mean, there's Judy Rogers and We Sing and all kinds of wonderful music. Read to babies. They're never too young to be read to. There's a certain tone that your voice takes on when you read. It's not like the normal start and stop all day long of talking, especially if you have other kids. There's a certain rhythm that we have when we read, and it's very soothing to babies.
It's,
they like
correct grammar.
Yes, there you go. Yeah, a little story about that. Why do I hear a man's voice?
There's a
company.
It's fine. They know the Sawyers. They're talking to Charles.
Oh, okay.
No. Okay, so I have to change.
Excuse of sin, right?
So no, I didn't.
Yeah, about the grammar thing.
Do you want to share
One of my biggest failings as a homeschool mom is I can't teach writing. Just cannot teach writing. I tried. I have like a half a dozen curriculums on my shelf. Never got through them. But we read. We used a literature-based curriculum. So I read to them every single day. They read books. Get to high school, I finally find Learning and Families. They have a writing class. So now that my kids are in high school, I'm going to throw them in and make them write. Turned out to be amazing writers. I'm like, whoa. I talked to the teacher, and she's like, well, it's because you read to them. Because you read good literature to them, because they read literature, it was in there. They just needed somebody to teach them, give them the tools so that it could come out on paper. So it really isn't too early to read, especially like rhyming things, little poems, Good Night Moon. You know, I can still recite half that book. Just those are wonderful things. And then pictures for them to see. And as you're reading to them, to see the pictures in that, board books are wonderful. And teach them respect for books. Books are your friends, you know. Yes.
How much would you recommend reading to children about this age? Like how many hours a day? Yeah. What would you recommend for you there?
Whenever it's convenient. You know, you want to be kind of rotating them through different things, sometimes on their back, sometimes on their stomach, sometimes sitting on your lap reading to them. Sometimes it can be a wind down time. I did with my kids, and I think this was the preschool teacher in me, because kids absolutely love and thrive on routine. And when they get to be toddlers, transitions are hard. When they're playing and it's time for them to take a nap, you can't just walk in and go, nap time, let's go. That is very difficult for them. So having a routine is very helpful because then they go with the flow. This is how we did it in a classroom with 16 toddlers. How do you get 16 toddlers to take a nap all at the same time? You know, yeah. How do you get them to sit at a table and all eat, you know, their own snacks at the same time? It's all routine. And so when my kids were little and did naps, every day we would sit down. Okay, now it's time. We're working toward nap time. We clean up everything. We would sing songs. We'd sing, and I'd let them pick when they were older. What song do you want to sing? You can pick one. We would sing a song, and we would read a book. Sometimes two books, sometimes three books. And we did that every nap time, every night time. That was just our routine. It was, and they knew it's settle down time, it's time to. So maybe before naps, you know, it's a good quiet, take them from playing in that. Now settle. It's one-on-one time. It's quiet time. It helps them relax and settle down. And then it's an easier transition to nap time.
That's an interesting point, because, like, when I put Naomi down for a nap, she's still, like, wired up. Mm-hmm. And, like, she'll move around in her crib. I mean, she does fine on her own, but
right.
Then eventually she'll fall asleep. But maybe reading a book will kind of settle her down.
Well, yeah, and if you always follow the nap with the book, then it helps her to make that transition. Instead of going from playing to in the crib, you know, I mean, it's great that she can do that herself, but if you help her do that, it's easier.
Where is she?
So.
Jumped.
She laughed.
She walked out. I have a question around the reading. Mm-hmm. So when Abigail's like 2 year and 8 months now, but when she was like 6 months, like I let her hold board books, mm-hmm. and like I would read them and point them out, but then I would let her hold them, and so mm-hmm. she was eating them, like chewing on them, and I didn't really want to, but then she ended up doing that a lot.
Yeah.
With Zoe now, I feel like I'm only reading to her. I let her touch it. I let her maybe put her mouth on it for a second, but I'm now letting her chew the books.
Yeah.
Is that the main?
Yeah, because you kind of need to teach them respect for the books, because otherwise you'll end up with shreds. And you don't, And it's hard because whatever you do now, it translates and it just gets worse. So you're exactly right by being careful not to let her, and let her, while you're holding it, let her touch and point and
I mean, she's still like, she's, you know, trying to grab it, rip it, and
you might want to give her something to hold on to while you're reading, so she has something for her hands, so she's not grabbing the book, because it's kind of, in a way, it can be a little tease.
Right.
Here's this pretty thing, but you can't touch it, you know.
Yeah.
So soft books, like the cloth ones, are good. Yeah. So give her one of those, and then you can read a board book. But I know my daughter is already teaching Hadley. She's 9 months old today, to turn pages. And that, believe it or not, is huge, because they learn that it goes, you know, you go left to right, and that order is, you're getting that in their brain.
I would just like to add, like Joshua, I usually read to him before he goes to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
It, I don't know why, but my third child like seemed to hate books, and I was like, so I would actually hold him down and read to him, and Mary was like, we need to stop doing that, because he's going to hate reading.
Yeah.
So I'd start him with my lap, and then I'd read to him. And he'd always want to get down. So what I did is confined him in a space, because I was always doing it in the living room. Well, Mary told me, go do it in your room, in his room, shut the door, dim the lights, and read to him, and let him walk around and keep pointing to the words and showing him the book. Well, it worked like a charm. Mm-hmm. Within like 2 weeks, he would stay on my lap.
Right.
And then he would go get more books for me to read. It was just like, oh, that was, I can't believe how well that worked.
Right.
So
right.
Any encouragement, you have kids that resist.
Yeah. Well, and also, if you could take them from playing and say it's nap time, and do that a couple days, and then, oh, would you like me to read to you before nap time? Make it, you know, okay, yeah.
Sure.
They're different. We have tricks up our sleeves, yeah.
Are you only supposed to point to the words? Like, or like when?
So they can see that you're actually
them?
Reading it.
Yeah.
I point to each word, and then they start looking at it.
Right.
And start understanding, oh,
right.
What age do you do that?
I do it right away.
Okay.
like now, how to do it.
Yeah. Give them the idea. And that also, you're moving left to right. Which freaked me out when we went to Israel because they read right to left. And every museum I went in, I'm like, why is the timeline starting at this age? And, it starts over here and goes that way. It was like, yeah, we are so oriented left to right. It's interesting. Unless you're Kate, and then it could be any which way. Let's see. Then I don't know if you guys want to talk about benefits of wearing your baby. I'm a big advocate of that. I found that. I didn't discover it until my fifth. I was juggling kids. We had missionary friends over for dinner from Indonesia. And she gave me a piece of cloth from Indonesia. And she goes, you know, the women in Indonesia, they use cloth like this to carry their babies. And so she tied it for me. And I plopped Logan into it. I think, how old was he? He was just a baby. He was only 2 or 3 months. And I was like, sweet. I can like have him in a sling here and I can do other stuff. And he's with me. And then I found that he was very happy if he was in the sling. And sometimes he would take naps in it. Sometimes, you know. But it freed me to do other things and still have him close. And there are tons you can look up if you're interested in that. People who advocate it are very, there's a lot of research on how it helps your baby and stuff. So,
when did you stop?
I just used a piece of cloth. And then with my last two, I found one that had rings so it could be adjustable. But it wasn't complicated.
Did you kind of stop?
Well, even when they were toddlers, I could turn them so they could sit up on my hip and the sling would wrap around them and hold them there so I didn't have to hold them in my arm all the time. Yeah. So whenever it was convenient, I always had it in my purse. Because how many times do you end up in the grocery store having to carry the baby and push the cart with the car seat in it, you know? So I always had the sling with me, especially a little cloth one just fit in my purse. And till they were toddlers, 2, 3. However, just anytime I had to carry them, it was just easier to have the sling that just kind of held them up. So.
Yeah, I tend to wear Zoe only in the grocery store and at the beach. But then at home, I kind of just put her away.
Yeah, if they're happy. My kids never, ever liked swings. I had one swing. No, I had one swing that I borrowed, and it was, you know, we're talking 25 years ago, where the swings were like this, you know? Yeah, and they only went in one direction, and you had to, they would just start to fall asleep, and you'd crank it, and you'd go, and they'd go. But all my kids always, whenever I put them in the swing, they'd do this, they'd go. Like this, and I'm like, okay, this is like torture. Not one of my kids ever liked the swing, so we went from swing to sling, and that was easier, you know, the movement and that. Another thing you can do is infant massage. There's lots of research on how that's wonderful for your kids.
I did that with number one.
It's funny you mention that. Ala nursed Lydia up until like two, a little past two. Mm-hmm. And she's like, all right, we're going to, you know, they weaned her off. And she's like, now I have to figure out something to do at night. So she'd like massage her, mm-hmm. like rub her back. And okay, and now she's almost four. She's like, mom, rub my back before bed.
Yeah.
So she went from nursing to that. I was like, that's kind of neat.
That is neat. And it keeps that touch and that relationship going. Yeah, instead of going from nursing to nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I do have a little, I found a little snippet here. It says, research in preterm infants and low birth weight infants has found evidence that massage improves weight gain, increases bone density, reduces cortisol, which is a stress hormone, may shorten the hospital stay and improves cognitive and motor development in later months. Also, studies have shown that massage performed on full-term infants is very beneficial to both infant and parents. It connects you to your baby, which is the most important thing when they're born. Now, toddlers and up. This is my favorite part. After having been in the toddler room and learned how to survive. toddlers have an insatiable appetite to learn. You don't have to tell them how to do it. They just are made to do it. We need to be kind of purposeful in the environment that we create for them. You still want to, of course, you want to sing, and now they can do the finger plays themselves. You can do songs like Father Abraham, where they're up and moving around. You can have a time when you do songs. I used to do like, well, at one point I was schooling 5 kids, and I had a toddler, and I had a newborn, and it was challenging. And so we really got into it at that time. That was the most organized I ever was in my life. Because I had to school these kids. You can't school kids in the afternoon during afternoon nap. They're wasted by afternoons. You need to get them in the morning. And so what to do with a toddler when you're trying to school? And so I had a schedule, and I would divide the schedule up. And it was really helpful because, okay, the toddler's up, we're going to do free play, but I always had to schedule one of my other kids, half-hour increments. Okay, and then it couldn't just be free play. It had to be, okay, it's outside time. You take them out on the park, you walk around the yard, you swing them in the swings. Now you come back in, and my kids knew. We never pulled out all the toys at once. We had puzzles. Okay, we're going to sit down and we're going to do puzzles. So you pull out the puzzles, you play with puzzles for a while, then you clean them up and you put them away. Then let's move on to something else. We're going to go do, when you teach preschool, they have centers, which is really helpful. There was a home center, which was like had the little appliances and the dishes and all that. They had a block center with building blocks. They had an art center with the art supplies. They had a water table, always had a water table in every room. And the kids, you can only have so many kids in each one at a time. But what it taught me was you don't have all the blocks and the home stuff and the art supplies. You don't have that all out at the same time. You categorize it, and it makes things fresh and new. And you also are teaching your kids to focus. So, okay, now we're going to do art time. So we're going to sit at the table. If we're going to paint, we're going to protect the surface. You have to let your kids make messes. We're going to pull out things, and we're going to paint, and we're going to sit here, and we're going to paint. And you can't get up from the table and run around, and you can't carry the paintbrush anywhere. We're going to do it right here at the table.
It's teaching obedience at the same time.
Yeah, it is. Teaching, yes. Yeah. And the thing is you can't set out the stuff and walk away and go, here, play with this, and when you're done, you know, I mean, it takes a lot of attention, and you have to stay there with them, and you're going to paint. Okay, now we're done. Now it's time to clean up. We don't move on to the next thing till we clean up. We put all that stuff away. So you're directing, and you want to give them an opportunity to make messes, and but let them explore. They need to touch. They need to smell. They need to taste. I have books, and I have a ton of books here that I want to share with you guys. This is homemade Play-Doh. And this is wonderful stuff. And now that I'm into essential oils, you can open it up and feel it. This is homemade. I made it last night. Over the carpet, I don't know. Yeah. It's very soft, and this stuff lasts for months and months if you keep it in a sealed bag. It's softer than regular Play-Doh, which is easier when they're little.
I tried to make it. I couldn't get a consistency right, but it just takes practice.
Here, feel this. Not really. It takes the right recipe.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Can you share it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Sarah's been making the flour.
That's lemon
stuff.
If you open
really,
it up and
really
smell it.
I really would love to make it.
Actually, you can take these home if you want. This one is a spicy one. And then I have spearmint. I have green spearmint and purple lavender. But with my kids, too... I also only did, I would make one lump of Play-Doh and it would be blue. Here's your blue Play-Doh. Because it drove me crazy when they would mix all the colors together, and I didn't want to be hanging over them going, no, don't do that. No. It was like, okay, you have blue Play-Doh. So here's your blue Play-Doh. Here are plastic spoons. I used to take plastic knives, and I would take them on the grout on the floor and file down the little teeth on them so they weren't sharp, and then give them those knives to play with. Cups, anything. You know, the dollar store's awesome for their kitchen utensils and stuff. And you can measuring cups and all that stuff. So they would play with Play-Doh, and it was Play-Doh time. And we would do that. You know, if I had to, I'd put down a vinyl tablecloth, like if they were doing it on the back porch, and make sure you clean up and put it away. And it's not, you know, it's just for specific times, and that keeps them focused on one thing. There's lots of different benefits to that. One of my favorite things was. I mean, it's always wonderful to do a bin with water in it, or like a little pool, or bath time. But I also, for daily stuff, I got a bin, a shallow bin, and at Sam's Club, I know you can get a 20-pound bag of rice for $6 and change, and I put a bag of rice in there, and then gave them little cups and spoons, and they could pour. You have no idea the things they're learning about physics and math and all those things by playing in there. And rice was easy because it doesn't stick to you like sand. And even if they eat it, it's not going to, you know, I mean, I changed many sandy diapers, believe me.
We did dry beans, too.
Dry beans would work, yeah.
I had a little kiddie pool, and it was pool time for the toddler. And they had the beans in the pool.
Right.
You know, so they couldn't. Fly all over the
world. Right, right.
But they definitely look for it, and then I would just dump the pool into a bin and put it all away. And
right.
They loved bean time.
Bean time.
Rice time.
Right. And think about it. You know, they're kicking their legs. They're feeling it all over their body. They're picking it up. It teaches fine motor skills, all kinds of things. It's just wonderful. And these are the things, too. If you have enough things up your sleeve like that, every time, kids will get bored with the same toys all the time, which another clue is, and even with your babies, divide your toys up into maybe 3 or 4 different groups and hide them.
Yeah.
And don't bring them all out at the same time, because otherwise they get bored.
Yeah, Christmas every month.
Yeah. And even with your babies, too, don't stick to just toys. There's so many real-life things. Go to the dollar store. Get... you know, spoons and cups, and it's amazing how they will stay way more entertained with those things because it takes imagination. Sometimes toys, like, it's all done for you. You know what I mean? There doesn't take much imagination. Oh, my goodness. When my kids, one time in preschool, we were studying, what were we studying? Oceans or something. That was the theme for the week. And I got an appliance box, a refrigerator box, and we actually made it into a boat. Like, we cut out one side, and we bent the front to be, you know, this, and we took paint and painted it like tempera paints, and the kids played in that, oh my goodness, forever. And I did that with my kids, too, just a cardboard box. You know, they learn so much. They learn all kinds of things about in and out, and just their imaginations go wild. And then give them a blanket too on top of that. Oh my goodness, it's amazing. Now I lost where I am. Oh, edible dough. I do have a book, and I don't know if this is still available, but this is called Mudworks. That's where I got the Play-Doh recipe. It is all Play-Doh recipes, and it tells you what it's good for. Some of them you can make into hard things if you let them air dry or you bake them. They have one that uses dryer lint because it's a different texture. Okay. Well, you can do soapy dough, cornmeal dough. That's going to feel even different. You want to give them experiences. Gingerbread. Stained glass dough, edible dough, tissue mache, and it's all stuff you make at home. Like that Play-Doh, To make those four different colors, it was 2 cups of flour, 1 cup of salt, water. There is cream of tartar in there, which is a preservative. And that's it. Yeah, food coloring. And then I put essential oils into so that you can add the smell to it, because that's important too. But I will pass all these around after. I have scribble cookies. This is things you do with, like, you know, you have a pile of broken crayons. I'm sure you do. Yeah, box. You can actually put them in a muffin tin and melt them, and it makes crayons that are all different colors. So there are different things. It's scribble cookies. And again, don't move the muffin tins. And all these have all kinds of art ideas in them that I use. Preschool activities in a bag. This was really handy when we were starting Saving Grace Bible Church, because my daughter was very little. Now she had to sit through the whole service. And so these are quiet toys. Yeah, quiet toys. And they give you templates and you make them. And if you have a laminator and you can laminate these things, they last much longer. But it tells you there's all different games you can make, and they all fit in a little bag, and they're quiet toys. So that's another great one. This is my absolute favorite. I bought this for my daughter. Yes. Slow and Steady Getting Ready. Have you guys ever heard this? Okay. This is one activity per week from birth to age 5 to get your kids ready for school, written by a kindergarten teacher. And it's made with household stuff. You just use the things you have around your house. And it tells you what you're after, what it is that the child is developing at that age, what you're going after, and helps them in that particular type of development. So, like, response to noisemaker. This is week 7 of your baby's life. So the baby's 7 weeks old. And it talks about making a sound with a noisy rattle and trying to get your baby to track where it's coming from. So, and it tells you what it develops, what the activity develops in your baby. And like I said, it's up to age 5 every week of your baby's life. So that's an awesome book. It doesn't look like this anymore. The one I got for my daughter looked better. You can see it's all faded because it's been on my shelf for a long time. But this was an awesome, awesome, awesome book. This is another of my favorite, and I have to say, I hope you guys are doing outside time with your kids, even babies, every day. Outside times. I think I got this at a homeschool convention, Creative Play Areas. And I got this after when my kids were, well, I only had 4 at the time. We were building our house. We built our house, and then I got pregnant right after we moved in with Logan, had Logan, and then started building my in-laws' house next door. So we had a lot of construction stuff going on. And I noticed the kids, like, cried when they filled in the septic tank and took their dirt pile away. They were just so upset. So then one Christmas, my mom's like, I don't know what to get your children. She was kind of a distant mom, lived up north and was not a hands-on grandma. She's like, I'm just going to send you $200 for your kids. And I'm thinking, is $200 worth of toys on my floor? I do not want $200. You know, and as your kids get older, you already have all the toys. And I'm like, dirt. We need to buy some dirt. So we actually bought dirt. And it cost us $400, not $200, because dirt's expensive. Nothing is, yeah, it's cheap as dirt. That is not a valid explanation.
Cheap as dirt you already own.
Yeah, right. So we actually had dirt delivered in the backyard. And I have to tell you, oh my goodness. We used to do church barbecues at the church we were part of before this church. It was a small church. The kids loved going to the Macellas because they have a dirt pile. And I mean, I have to warn you, they're going to get dirty, filthy. But my boys, I would look out the back window and see dirt flying out of the middle of it, because they'd be digging down to China in the middle of it, and it would be their fort. And I mean, that was the best $400 we spent ever.
It was still there when Saving Grace started. I used to put my kids in boots to go.
Yes, yes. But it was a favorite. But just, they would play for hours on it. And where else do you get a hill in Florida? I mean, you know, you exercise those muscles of climbing up a hill and going down a hill, and, you know, then they progress to riding the dirt bike over the hill and using it as a jump, and, you know, but if you can give your children an area of your yard to get dirty in, to make mud puddles, and that's what this book is kind of about. This is making things all out of stuff you have around the house. And it's just, it's kind of a homegrown type of book, you know, like hand drawings and stuff. Concrete fun, what to do with concrete, you know, tire swing, just having a rope. Oh, this is fun. When my kids were little, I went to Goodwill and bought clothes, dress-up clothes. Funky, funny, silky dresses and hats and things like that. And we always had a dress-up bin, you know, clip-on tie and a dress shirt and all that. And they just adored that. It's funny to look at pictures of them now dressed up in the dress-up clothes and stuff. But another idea. But this is a really cool book, and I don't know if this is still available or not. But anyway, I will make these available, and you guys can borrow them if you can't buy them or whatever, even if you can buy them. But wonderful, wonderful books. And then as my kids got a little older, one thing we did was I remember taking little kids and one in a backpack and going. Sarasota County Parks has nature walks, and they have experts. I mean, these people have degrees in insects and plants and herbs and things like that. These walks are free. They do bird watching ones. They do down at Lemon Bay Park. They have a butterfly garden. They have experts who will, and they love kids, because when you go there, you'll be the only one with kids. I mean, there'll be all these people over 80, but, and then they all like just love your little kids and they think it's wonderful. But for me, it was like I learned right along with them. And we would do walks in the woods and point out different things. You should learn about your environment. Learn about the birds you see in your yard and the flowers that grow in the ditch, and teach your kids. These books, Florida's Fabulous, are phenomenal books. Even just yesterday, Kate brought me something, and I'm like, well, go look it up in the book. You know, oh, no, I know what it was. My son brought me a dead bird. I get up in the morning. Logan is an animal lover. I get up in the morning and I go to get a cup of coffee, and there's a big note and it says, injured bird, maybe dead, in a bin in the garage. So I go in there. He was coming home and this bird was in the middle of the road and it was still alive. And so he brought it home, didn't know what to do with it. So he made a little bed out of paper towels and stuff, and it was in the garage. Of course, by the time I got it, rigor mortis had set in. But it was, you know, Kate's looking at it. I'm like, well, let's go look up the bird. Let's see what kind of bird it is. We still never identified it. But for her, looking it up, I mean, this is an insect book. We always looked at insects. Check out insects. And this book has pictures, larval stage, it has pictures of everything, the different stages, and it tells you like fascinating things about it. So it's not just identifying, you know, it's called this. It tells you fascinating things about it. So like lice. My kids never had lice. I don't know what they look like. But yeah, it's just really cool. So when you're outside, when your child's a toddler, don't let it escape. Like, oh, look at that bug. I wonder what kind of bug that is. Let's go look it up, you know?
FYI, I have been getting those one at a time as they're available at the Goodwill bookstore.
Oh.
Instead of $16, $18 on Amazon. So every time I'm at the Goodwill bookstore, I look in the Florida section right in the front.
Right.
And I'll find a new one, or I'll buy one I already have.
Yeah, they are.
She told me about them 6 years ago, so we've been like slowly collecting.
Yeah, I had to slowly accrue them. When people wanted to buy my kids something, I'm like, buy a Florida's Fabulous book. We really want the one on butterflies, or we really want the one on mammals. They're awesome books. Awesome. Actually, I should probably just start passing.
Could you either email me a list of books, ones that you brought today, so I could send them out to everybody?
Yeah, I'll actually find links for them if I can.
Perfect.
Okay, but anyway, I don't know where to put these. We'll just set them here. You guys can look at those. See, kids just, they have a fascination with the world around them. You don't have to force them to do these things. They're going to want to do them. You just have to give them the opportunity to do them. My favorite thing was on a lanai, I give them space. We had a little picnic table that was their size so that they could do things out there, and I would take a vinyl-backed or a cloth-backed vinyl tablecloth and put it underneath the picnic table. So whatever they're doing, if they're painting or whatever, you know, it contained the mess. Because you don't want to be afraid to make the mess. It's like they've got to make messes. They're kids. That's what they're supposed to do. Have a time every day when you go outside and you throw a ball, kick a ball, you know, run around, jump up and down, do whatever. Can you hop on one foot? Can you do this? You know, and when they're babies, point out everything, you know, like look at the truck. It's a yellow truck. Constantly have a dialogue going with your baby. That's how they learn language. And the language is that part that develops the brain. It's just huge, communicating. I actually have a book here called Playpen to Podium by Jeff Myers. It's about communication. Wonderful book. Talks about how you develop this, because if you think about it, what's the most important thing but communicating Christ to the world? So our kids, this is why we do speech and debate with our kids, because we want them to be able to communicate the love of Christ to the world. That's priority in our kids' lives. So this is an interesting book about how to help children develop communication skills from playpen age. So you're talking babies. And it goes on through all the different toddler communication and all those things. So this is also an absolute wonderful book to get you thinking in those ways about developing language. I know I'm kind of all over the map here. Sorry. I have 5 more minutes. Okay. Include your kids in chores too.
Amen.
I mean, save some of the chores for nap time so that you are doing one-on-one time with your kids. Don't try to have the clean house while they're awake so that you can have the nap time to yourself. I know it's a huge sacrifice, but you're a mom. It's what you do. You can include your kids, and even at toddler age, you can include them. You know, if they drop something on the floor, get down on the floor with them. Show them how to wipe it up. It's okay. This is part of life. You know, you're not their slave. They should do it with you. There are plenty of recipes on the internet for safe cleaners made with baking soda and a drop of essential oil or whatever. Baking soda and water, or vinegar and water, where they can touch it and clean it up. It's great. You know, include them in whatever you do. Take them to the store with you. It's funny. I took the kids, you know, having homeschooled them, they always went to the store with me, and not having any family. So we would make the trip. And back then it was like, oh, is school out today? No, I homeschool. Is that legal? I'm like, yes, it's legal. You know, so we would go through the store. I even had an older guy who was bringing in carriages at Publix one day. And I think I must have had 4 or 5 kids and was pregnant. And he looks at me and he goes, you need to tell your husband to have a vasectomy. And I was like, I couldn't speak until like after I was halfway through my shopping trip. I was so stunned by that. So that was what we did. We went to the store. We always went to the store together. We did everything. So the kids would go, can I have this? No, you can't have that. We're not doing that now because blah, 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 blah. This is not good. Let's look at the ingredients on it. It's, you know, not good for you or whatever. Look at how expensive it is. We can do the store brand. Well, that was just normal for me to do that because I had the kids with me all the time. They're so funny. They're like 20-somethings. They come home, Mom, I got jeans at Walmart for $5. And they're just like so excited, you know. And they're all, it's funny because they just, it's just an automatic thing. And I know I can send them to the store. I have 2 of them that work at a grocery store. Do you want me to pick something up? I'll just say, yeah, bring home sour cream. I know that they will go and they will study and they will pick the store brand and the less expensive one, or if there's one on sale, they will do the math, because they did that all their growing up years. It was just life. You know, so do life with your kids. you know, clean with them and walk with them and do the grocery store and include them in cooking. Get a little stool so they can be up where they can see what you're doing. I mean, you can't always have them near the stove. But if you're mixing, explain to them why you're mixing, what you're doing. Well, you don't, you know, you mix the dry ingredients over here and the wet ingredients over there, and then you mix them together. And just normal life. You do life together and explain everything. Talk to them, tell them everything. Even when they're babies, talk to them, tell them, point things out. Look at this airplane. I had Logan, I don't know if he was like deprived because he was number 5, but we would ride in the car and he would go, truck, 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 truck. Yes, Logan, I saw the truck. Tractor, tractor. Yes, Logan, I saw the tractor. Until he got a response from me, he was not going to move on to something else. And he would point, you know, he wanted that that conversation back and forth, you know. I mean, that's wonderful, you know. And then I have to tell this too. I know we're running out of time, but something that really hit home for me. We had in 2007, we bought a second business, and it was an absolute... It was a nightmare year. We could not homeschool. I can't even go into details about how horrible it was. It was God's design for our sanctification. Totally thankful for this experience. But it really kind of shredded our family. And so we actually fell a year behind in school. We didn't school. And when we went back to school the following year, I think Taylor was 15, Alex was 13. So at that point, they should have been doing their school on their own, reading the books and doing their school. And we were all so, I don't want to say damaged because that makes it sound like it was a bad thing. It was God's design for our family. But we were all so overwhelmed by everything that had happened the previous year. The boys came to me and they said, "Can you just read to us? Can you please just read to us?" That to them was their connection. That was what we needed to do. So at 15 and 13, Mom sat down with them and read to them because our curriculum required about 2 to 3 hours of reading a day. And they wanted me to sit and read to them for 2 to 3 hours a day again. And that to them was normal. That was what brought us back to, okay, life is okay again. You know, we have this connection again. And that was brought healing for us because that's what we had done together. I look back on all those years, you know, sometimes I had 2 or 3 different levels of reading that I was reading 1 to 3 hours a day for each one of them. I mean, I spend a large part of my time on the couch reading to my kids. I didn't trade a minute of it for the world, those times. And these guys, I mean, I'm not saying you guys need to homeschool, but you have them home right now. Take advantage of it. Build that relationship with them. You will not be sorry. You will not be sorry for the connection you make. And especially that quiet time of sitting and reading together is just huge. It's just huge. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure you guys...
When Joel read, we read Little House on the Prairie. I read to them for about 3 years, Little House on the Prairie, from the first to the last. And what was interesting is Joel's little homeschool high school graduation, all of them have different personalities. He said, "Does anyone have any questions?" Joy was mortified. She's like, "You don't do that at a graduation." But everyone loved Joel. That's the way Joel is. A father raised his hand. "What did you like best about homeschooling?" "My mom reading Little House on the Prairie for years to us."
Yeah.
So yeah, the reading thing is absolutely incredible to them. That was his highlight.
Right.
So, anyway, 13 years of school.
And though you didn't talk about the spiritual aspect, I mean, that's just why it's so important as you're communicating and pouring into your children constantly and helping them think about those things. That's where then it comes in with the spiritual, too. Look what God gave you, you know, pouring into them on that spiritual aspect, too. So then when they're old enough to communicate that, it's not a shock to them.
Right.
You've already been teaching them how to think through things and observe things.
Right. Yeah, and that's huge, too. I mean, I used to read the newspaper to my kids, too, because I had been accused of sheltering my kids, and I'm thinking, are you kidding? My kids hear things that other kids don't hear, because we would read the newspaper together, and I would say, look at this. This person did this, and look at how they got in trouble. It was a learning tool, you know? But everything was filtered through me. You know, it wasn't, I'm not letting the world communicate with my kids. I'm communicating with my kids about the world and giving them a Christian worldview, which is huge. So my kids grew up and, you know, and they got onto Little League teams and were in the dugouts and stuff and heard things. They weren't, like, unaware of the things that went on in the world. It's just, I mean, they were still innocent, though. So.
But as Meg said, too, the ministry life. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're making a meal for someone that just had a baby that's
right.
ill, and
yep.
your family comes along helping you make the meal
right.
or delivering the meal,
right.
you do that a lot too.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, and they're learning to make the meal with that purpose,
right.
which is a real blessing, you know, for them to experience as well.
Yeah, and it is such a blessing that you guys can be home with your kids. You know, I mean, having been on the preschool side and seeing the kids get dropped off, it's hard. It's really hard. It's hard on the kids. It's hard on the parents. So, you know, staying home, don't take it for granted. It's, if you can do that, it's just a huge blessing. You guys have any questions?
So I know you focused a lot on